From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Deepak Bhatt, Senior Associate Editor for ACC.org. I'm filling in this week for Dr. Kim Eagle on Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. I believe Dr. Eagle is away on vacation. I think it might be Montana. At least I saw some nice pictures from Montana on his Twitter feed. This week I'm going to discuss a few different journal scans we're doing. There's a lot of good stuff. I just picked four things that happened to catch my fancy. Let me start with a paper in Circulation that has to do with the impact of prolonged spaceflight on blood pressure. And the good news is that in this particular study, prolonged exposure to spaceflight didn't really have any meaningful impact on systolic blood pressure variability. The parameters measured all essentially returned to normal, or at least to pre-flight values, once the astronauts returned to Earth. I thought this was an interesting study if we do end up going on a mission to Mars or exploring space further, which I think will happen in our lifetimes and certainly the lifetimes of our children. And I figured any paper about astronauts has got to be cool. Another interesting paper, published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, has to do with AFib in former NFL players. And what was found among the former NFL players was an increased prevalence of atrial fibrillation, at least when compared to a population-based control group. And I guess, on the one hand, it was good that the majority of NFL athletes who screened positive for atrial fibrillation were rate-controlled and, generally speaking, asymptomatic, though a large majority should have actually been on anticoagulation based on their stroke risk. So another message to be vigilant for atrial fibrillation, pretty much in everyone past a certain age, but certainly heightened awareness even in people that you might think of as being really athletic, maybe even more so in people that are athletic, given the association between high-intensity exercise and increased risk of atrial fibrillation. Another article that I thought was really interesting was in Circulation Cardiovascular Quality and Outcomes. This examined the effect of access to PCSK9 inhibitors that were prescribed by the doctor, but may or may not have actually been available for the patient to in fact take. That is, as I think everyone listening knows, it's been a real challenge getting prescriptions for PCSK9 inhibitors filled. There are a lot of hoops that the doctor's office has to jump through, or hurdles they need to clear. It's a lot of work getting these PCSK9 inhibitors covered, lots of paperwork and lots of phone calls and big hassle factor. That's on purpose to make it difficult, of course. But is there any adverse consequence to patients? Well, yes, it appears to be the case from this study. The patients here had higher rates of cardiovascular events if their PCSK9 inhibitor prescriptions were rejected, or if the patient then just abandoned the PCSK9 inhibitor, even if it were allowed, but if the copay were too high. So here is some concrete evidence that these efforts by third-party payers, PBMs, other sorts of folks to rein in costs, at least in this specific circumstance of PCSK9 inhibitors where the doctor says you need it, is backfiring and actually hurting patients. So pretty powerful message, I think. And the final article I'll mention is one in JACC Heart Failure from the MESA study that examines the relationship between omega-3 fatty acids and the risk of incident heart failure. What was found was that a higher plasma level of EPA, or eicosapentaenoic acid, an omega-3 fatty acid, was significantly associated with a lower risk of heart failure, whether that was heart failure with reduced or preserved ejection fraction. So it's a provocative study. More good data coming out about EPA. I've got to say, in the REDUCE-IT trial, we didn't actually see a reduction in heart failure. We looked and didn't see, so at least in that population over that time course of an average of about 5 years, we didn't see an effect of giving EPA in the form of eicosapentaethyl and a lower risk of heart failure. But at least in the MESA cohort, this association seems pretty strong. What future trials will need to see is whether an at-risk patient's EPA supplementation in fact does or does not reduce the risk for heart failure. And we certainly do need more treatments for heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, and for sure need more treatments for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. It's been a hard area, in particular heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, finding therapies that work. A lot of things that seem to come close, but hard to actually hit the mark. So these data are interesting, provocative, but of course a lot more will need to be done in the form of randomized clinical trials. So that's just a tasting of what we've got for you this week on ACC.org in terms of journal scans. I didn't even get into some of the clinical trial coverage and trial updates, but a lot of good stuff. Thanks very much for listening to this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. All the topics I discussed today can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. Please find us there or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great week.